This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, December 19th, 2013. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poems to fight against the dark. Officially, winter begins on December 21st, but unofficially, we've already been blasted by cold and snow, at least here on the East Coast. It's the time of year when the sun barely makes it over the horizon before it's gone again. The good news is that Christmas is close and may already be past by the time you listen to this. With that in mind, I asked two of my colleagues at the Poetry Foundation to choose a poem each from the archive that reflects the season and perhaps their mood. Kathy Halley is the editor of the Poetry Foundation's website, and Valerie Johnson is the managing editor of Poetry Magazine. Val, let's start with you. You chose Taking Down the Tree by Jane Kenyon. Why'd you choose this one?
Well, looking through our archive of winter and Christmas poems, this one jumped out at me. Maybe first because I just this last weekend put up my sort of sad small tree in my new house. And that tree is decorated with ornaments that my mother gave to me. She divided the ornaments from our family Christmas tree between myself and my three siblings. So we got all of our favorites, or some of them we had to sort of war over to claim for our own house. So this is the second year of having my own tree with my childhood ornaments now being mine. And she talks about very similar circumstances in this particular poem.
Mm-hmm. It begins with a brief scene from Hamlet, very strangely. Mm-hmm. And then it goes, as you said, into childhood memories of taking down the Christmas tree. Why don't you give it a read? Here's Jane Kenyon's poem, Taking Down the Tree.
"Give me some light," cries Hamlet's uncle midway through the murder of Gonzago. "Light, light," cries scattering courtesans. Here, as in Denmark, it's dark at 4, and even the moon shines with only half a heart. The ornaments go down into the box. The silver spaniel, my darling, on its collar, from mother's childhood in Illinois. The balsa jumping jack my brother and I fought over, pulling limb from limb. Mother drew it together again with thread, while I watched, feeling depraved at the age of 10. With something more than caution, I handle them, and the lights, with their tin, star-shaped reflectors, brought along from house to house, their pasteboard toy suitcases increasingly flimsy. Tick, tick, the desiccated needles drop. By supper time, all that remains is the scent of balsam fir. If it's darkness we're having, let it be extravagant."
That was Taking Down the Tree by Jane Kenyon from her collected poems. Now, Val, it's those last lines that really make this poem shine. If it's darkness we're having, let it be extravagant.
I love that. And I'm not sure what I think about it or what exactly it means. I mean, I think it has a lot of meanings in this poem. Again, like you're saying, the sort of extravagance that we put on to beat back the dull, cold winter, but also the idea of the reverse of that, putting all of that extravagance away and the intense extravagance of everything being dark, not only it being dark, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but also having removed all of that light and all of that pageantry from the house, and that idea of just being in that darkness or going back to life as it is normally after, Christmas Day.
But there's that scent of the Christmas tree still, of the balsam fir still in the air, even though the
exactly.
tree is gone. Yeah. Yeah, that's a wonderful one. And I think that those last lines take what could be a simple memory poem and just turn it into something grand.
Absolutely. And it ties back into that first stanza as well, relating to Hamlet and Hamlet's uncle bursting out in the middle of the play as he's sort of outing him to everyone for the murder, and the idea that there's safety in light, and the fear is really there in the darkness of the play, I think is also an interesting point and a very strange point to start this poem.
It's very strange, right? Because why?
Yeah.
It's a memory poem it's a childhood memory poem, and it begins with a murder scene from Hamlet. I still can't make sense of that. Can you?
I can't either, but I like thinking about it.
Well, I'm...
Go ahead, Kathy.
I'm afraid of the darkness You used the word fear a second ago, Val, and I'm afraid of the darkness, and so I love putting up the Christmas lights, and I'm afraid of taking it down. But it is so wonderful at the end of that poem to not be afraid of the dark anymore, to realize that there's a richness there, and that word extravagance really plays on that, you know, that it's rich. And yeah, Curtis, when you mentioned that the scent of the leaves is there, you may not be able to see, but there's something else for us in it.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's striking about the ornaments that I have inherited from my family is how cheap they are. How as a kid, I have an old Christmas stocking that I still have my grandmother made. And it's just, for me, it was a hugely magical thing when I was a kid. I look at it now and I think, my God, my grandmother just went to the five and dime and sewed something together. Mm-hmm. And I love the line in this poem, she handles these ornaments with something more than caution. Mm-hmm. To me, it captures reverence that children have towards these occasions that we often put on for them.
Absolutely. Well, and there's one particular ornament growing up. I think it's from before my childhood. It maybe came from my mother's childhood even. I don't really know the exact origin of this ornament, but it's a white lion. And it's one of those, that have the felt painted on the very thin plastic. And so it's just this, you know, lion in a sort of joyous little stance and all white with a white mane. But over the years, the mane and the fur had rubbed off and its eyes had sort of rubbed off. But that was always my favorite ornament as a child. It still is. And my family would just make fun of me for loving that ornament and not throwing it away. I refused to let my mom throw it away. It has a place of prominence on my own tree at home. And I think about treating it so delicately because I would just be despondent if anything happened to it. But it is. It's nothing could happen to it. It's the ornament that will survive everything because it's plastic. It's junk. You couldn't break it if you tried. It just it looks worse for wear every year.
So, Kathy, the music swelling up underneath us is the Christmas carol In the Bleak Midwinter, set to music in 1909 by Harold Dirk and performed here by the Bach Choir and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. Now, you chose the words to this carol, a poem written in the 1870s by Christina Rossetti, and I'm glad you chose this poem because I never understood the words of the carol. Why did you choose it? What appeals to you about it?
Well, I grew up singing this carol in high school. Uh-huh. So, in fact, it's so difficult for me to read without hearing Mrs. Kuhn, our choir teacher, yelling at me because I was not holding the notes properly. Uh-huh. So it's a childhood memory for me, this poem. We did a festival of lessening carols, and we sang all of these songs, most of the time standing up in these robes. We had to wear these red skirts and these white shifts on top. And for In the Bleak Midwinter, we always sat down. We had to sit at the edge of our chair and sing this song.
Why?
Oh, I think it's just the mood of the rest of it was all about celebration. There is celebration in this poem, really, but it's very somber. And we were just reflecting that in our posture.
Now, it's a very Christian poem written specifically for Christmas. And I know it's impossible to compete with the sounds of the beautiful carol in the back of everyone's minds. But would you read it for us?
In the Bleak Midwinter by Christina Rossetti. In the bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan. Earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone. Snow had fallen, snow on snow, snow on snow. In the bleak midwinter, long ago. Our God, heaven cannot hold him, nor earth sustain. Heaven and earth shall flee away when he comes to reign. In the bleak midwinter, a stable place sufficed, the Lord God Almighty, Jesus Christ. Enough for him whom cherubim worship night and day, breastful of milk and a manger full of hay. Enough for him whom angels fall before, the ox and ass and camel which adore. Angels and archangels may have gathered there. Cherubim and seraphim thronged the air. But his mother only, in her maiden bliss, worshipped the beloved with a kiss. What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what can I give him? Give my heart.
So after having grown up with that as a Christmas carol, how does it strike you now in its raw form as just words?
Well, it's much better as a carol. It really is. And it went snow on snow.
Yeah.
It's interesting because so much of my childhood mind just focused on the snow and on the bleakness of the winter and the weather.
And you just tuned out that Jesus Christ stuff?
I tuned out the Jesus Christ. It's true. But there's something about that sense of love at the end. Really, like you get that image of Mary, the mother, kissing the child.
Yeah. But his mother only in her maiden bliss worshiped the beloved with a kiss. That's a nice line.
It is. And what I love about that is that it's also reflected a little later when the speaker is saying, I'm poor. What can I give? I can't give a lamb. I don't know what I can give. And what I can give is my heart. It's just reflected there again, that sense of like loving. I can open my heart to this. I guess it's literally Jesus Christ in the poem. But
yeah.
It's a good lesson for even agnostics.
Yeah. It's actually a beautiful ending. It moves me, even non-Christian that I am, it moves me. But I'm curious why you think a scene of bleak midwinter leads to such a kind of warm spiritual embrace at the end of the poem.
It's not coincidental, probably, that the mythology, of Christ and birth is happening in the coldest, roughest part of the year.
Yeah.
In some ways, it reminds me of the light on the Christmas tree. You know, that these things are metaphorical, right? The light on the Christmas tree in the poem we just talked about, that sense of there is light in the midst of the darkness, and we have to remind ourselves of that. That's how you get through the bleak midwinter. You remember that things are still and quiet and stony, really. And out of that comes – there is melting. There's warmth. There's all of those things. It's how we survive the winter.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we almost need some sort of spiritual dimension to winter just to get through it. Spiritual is the wrong word, but some sort of emotional dimension to get through it. Otherwise, it's been bleak. I don't know what it's been like at Chicago, but in New York, it's been terrible so far.
Yeah, it's been awful here too.
Well, and I think that's such a good point you're making there, Curtis, especially I think for so many people, I can speak for myself, not being necessarily Christian, religious, engaged in religious practice, there's still such a close connection to the spiritual and Christian hymns of Christmas for me in that way. And again, the mythology and imagery of the stable and Joseph and Mary being shunned from the inn and this majestic occurrence in the middle of this cold and dingy and dark place. And again, I think maybe it is, an emotional crutch or booster that we tie ourselves to get through the winter, but it affects me. And those hymns always have such a heartwarming, really nostalgic feeling to me even now.
Well, it's so interesting too. I just want to say one other thing that I'm thinking about in terms of that last line of the Kenyon poem speaks of extravagance, and this poem is ending with poverty, right? There's poverty, but there's also a kind of richness in the dark because you have love and hope.
Kathy Halley is the web editor of PoetryFoundation.org, where you can read selections of Christmas and winter poems for any mood. Valerie Johnson is the managing editor of Poetry Magazine. You can subscribe to this podcast and the Poetry Magazine podcast in the iTunes Store, or you can stream them straight from our site, PoetryFoundation.org. If you have any comments on this program, email us at podcast@PoetryFoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.